In today's reading from the Acts of the Apostles, we read, "But some from the party of the Pharisees who had become believers stood up and said, 'It is necessary to circumcise them and direct them to observe the Mosaic law.'" Hello again. In recent years, our church has become more and more polarized. Not only are members of the faithful divided, bishops even are divided, as they argue, sometimes with apparent bitterness, and even Pope Francis has been criticized by certain bishops. Such polarization at first seems scandalous. On the other hand, when one reads and reflects upon today's first reading from the 15th chapter of the Acts of the Apostles, he or she may conclude that from the very beginning, the church has encountered conflicts and controversies. Indeed, as we can read in Paul's letter to the Galatians, at one point Paul and Peter disagreed. And so as we hear today, when Paul and Barnabas return from their travels and talks about their converting Gentiles, they were met with arguments from some. Folks, to understand the context of this argument, it'd be well to provide a brief overview of the plan and the purpose of Luke's writing of the Acts of the Apostles. This fifth book of the New Testament serves as an addendum to Luke's Gospel. The name Acts of the Apostles was first used by St. Irenaeus in the late 2nd century. It is not known whether this was an existing name for the book or one invented by Irenaeus. It does seem clear that it was not given by the author, as the word praxis, deeds or acts, only appears once in the text. And there it refers not to the apostles, but to deeds confessed by their followers. Now it is important to note that at the beginning of his gospel, in his Acts of the Apostles, Luke addresses a certain Theophilia. Commentators believe that this gentleman, whose name means friend of God, was a generous benefactor to Luke. He therefore was indeed a friend of God by being a friend of Luke. In his gospel, Luke tells how God fulfilled his plan for the world's salvation through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth. Then, in the Acts, Luke continues the story of Christianity in the first century, beginning with the ascension of Jesus to heaven. The early chapters set in Jerusalem describe the day of Pentecost, the coming of the Holy Spirit, and the growth of the church in Jerusalem. Initially, many Jews are receptive to the Christian message, but later they turn against the followers of Jesus, rejected by the Jews. The message is taken to the Gentiles under the guidance of Paul on his apostolic trips. The latter part of Acts paints and tells the story of Paul's conversion, his mission in Asia Minor and the Aegean area, and finally his imprisonment in Rome, where as the book ends, he awaits trial. Commentators suggest that Luke's writing in the Acts is an attempt to answer a theological problem, namely, how the Messiah promised to the Jews came to have an overwhelmingly non-Jewish church. The answer it provides, and its central theme, is that the message of Christ was sent to the Gentiles because the Jews rejected it. This theme is introduced in chapter 4 of the Gospel of Luke, when Jesus, rejected in Jerusalem, recalls that the prophets were rejected by Israel and accepted by Gentiles. At the end of the gospel, Jesus commands his disciples to preach his message to all nations, beginning from Jerusalem. In Luke, in Acts, has Jesus repeat this command, telling them to preach in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. They then proceed to do so, in the order outlined, first Jerusalem, then Judea and Samaria, then the entire Roman world. For Luke, the Holy Spirit is the driving force behind this spread of the Christian message, and he places more emphasis on it than any other evangelists. The Spirit is poured out at Pentecost on the first Samaritan and Gentile believers, and on disciples who had been baptized only by John the Baptist. Each time it's a sign of God's approval. The Holy Spirit represents God's power. Most notably at his ascension, Jesus tells his followers, "You shall receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you." Through the Holy Spirit, disciples are giving speech to convert thousands in Jerusalem, forming the first community of followers of Jesus, that is, the church. Returning to today's first reading, we may gain insight into the controversies of today by recognizing that there were, in the very first community of faith, when Paul and Barnabas related the conversions of Gentiles, there was conflict. And who can fault the first Jewish Christians when seen in the light of the sacrifices made by their Jewish ancestors of faith, who established the rituals of circumcision, and many other sacred rituals? It is easy to see how they would have objected to the Gentiles being given an easy pass into the community of believers. Wouldn't you, if your family members had made sacrifices and been persecuted for their Jewish faith? But we learn from Luke's gospel how the Spirit of God works in the person of Jesus, and then in Acts, in the persons of Peter, Paul, Barnabas, and others. Yes, friends, the Spirit of God was the driving force behind Luke's gospel and Luke's Acts of the Apostles. And it's the same Spirit which is the driving force in our church today. The current synod is one example of this force. For as Pope Francis notes, quote, "In the one people of God, therefore, let us journey together in order to experience a church that receives and lives this gift of unity and is open to the voice of the Spirit. Without the Spirit, there is no synod," unquote. And we might conclude, without the Spirit, there is no church.